Some songwriters write music to get things off their chest. Some things will do it to flex their creative muscle. Others do it because it's what they were born to do. Now, Dominic Breen, I think, fits into all of those categories. And as a prolific songwriter, it was surely a tough task to narrow down his assemblage of songs into a succinct group of tracks that will forever be enshrined as his debut. Because that's what he's done with Blue Volume, an album that traverses life through the lens of a musician, a wordsmith, and somebody that knows exactly how to say it all without saying too much. It's been a delight to be along for the Dominic Breen journey since we first heard him sing about Sydney kids in 2018, and it's a pleasure to welcome him right now to the Tuck Shop.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Great to hear you.
Hello, Mick and Jules. Hello, listeners. Thanks very much for having me on the show.
It's so great to have you, Dom, particularly on the weekend after your debut album has dropped. It must be so exciting just to have it out in the world finally after, I feel like, a long time of knowing that it's coming. How are you feeling about it? Still on the buzz? You still on a high? How's the weekend been for you?
I've just been taking it pretty easy. It feels good to have it out for sure. It feels like, it feels like the what is ahead is clearer now, you know, that now that that big pothole of releasing it is out of the way. So, moving on, driving fast.
Because it was sort of delayed a little bit, I guess, obviously through COVID, and then, of course, you had your accident, which we'll talk about a bit later. So things have been pushed back and back and back. But now that it's out, and I feel like, you know, spring is here, gigs are coming back soon, I feel like it's a pretty good time for you and for going forward and for the next 12 to 18 months to hopefully tour this record.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to all of it. Yeah, definitely there was a bit of there was a few trials earlier in the year, and but you know, there's always going to be something. There's always going to be some sort of trial, so sure. You just got to keep doing it. But yeah, it feels like a good time to release it now. Although I just saw in the news that Dominic Perrottet is maybe going to be the premier, so it's like, oh man, it's, you know, there's not many Dominics really. There's a few, but like, don't tell me this guy's going to come and steal the Dominic show. Like,
oh no, I hadn't thought of that. Mean? Yeah, hopefully you won't win the election or the whatever it is.
I don't know about any of that, but I've heard that they're calling him Dodgy Dom, and I hope nobody gets him mixed up.
Well, surely not, because he hasn't created such an amazing record like you have. I like to ask musicians what those words mean, debut album, because you famously only get one shot at a debut. Was that something that's ever sort of run through your head as you're compiling this record?
I kind of think it's a bit of a shame that there's so much emphasis on, how you first introduce yourself musically with an album and what your first step looks like. Because as we know in life, like sometimes, you know, you trip or like, you're not always perfect or whatever when you first do something. And I think the industry puts a lot of weight on the first thing being the best. And there's certainly a few, channels and perhaps radio stations that put a lot of emphasis on age and what it's like at the very beginning, and after that maybe they're not as interested. So in one sense, yeah, I was probably, you know, I wanted it to be good, so there was that. But debut album, I've got a lot of songs that I would like to put out, so this just feels good that I've started doing that. That's the main thing for me, guess, if that makes sense.
For sure.
So take us through the story of, you know, how this album came together. I read that it was kind of you and Tim Fitz, who people might know from working with Middle Kids a lot, but it was kind of you two in an attic that were pulling all this together. So how did it, you know, how did these songs come? You know, how did it all get pulled together?
Well, the real beginning of Tim Fitz and I's relationship was Middle Kids were playing a gig in Clayton, Victoria, which is, I guess, the outer suburbs of Melbourne.
Yeah.
And the Dominic Breen show got asked to support. So we drove down and we got along, and And then he asked if I had any recordings lined up. And anyway, over the next couple of years, I'd send him voice memos and demos here and there. And we ended up recording a couple of songs a couple of years ago, like Love Is Everywhere We Go, and another song called Ashfield.
Yeah.
And anyway, I just used to send him and some other friends some demos and things. And one day he just asked, like, what's stopping me from recording properly? And I guess I sort of couldn't answer that. So then we, you know, we thought to record, I guess. And yeah, but it was a weird time. We started the process at various junctures. You know, he'd just become a father, and it was a few things going on in my personal life that were very new to me. There we were, and COVID was looming on the horizon. I remember it was being spoken about on the radio and stuff. It wasn't like a real threat yet. Certainly no one expected it to do what it did. So we just kind of locked in and just started recording just him and I. There's one song where there's a couple of guests, I guess, which I recorded at my house, sort of after, like, the backing vocals and things. But yeah, it was a weird time, and I look back on it fondly.
Had these songs been bouncing around in your head for a while now, or was it a case that all of this came spilling out of that particular kind of period where all this was going on?
They already existed, the songs. They were already written the way they are, in a way. I could hear them in my head, and, you know, I don't really actually write them down, but I could play them through, and they sounded like how they sound on this record. But Tim has a way of, you know, you can get some cool sounds and things, and I think we kind of, I don't know. We made it sound better than my demos, basically, and my voice memos. We explored different sounds and screechy guitars on, like, some of these songs kind of are buried in, like, to me, they come from, like, a folk sort of tradition. That's kind of the music that I'm interested in. Like Christy Moore, I'm listening to a lot, and like stuff like that. But we, I guess, wanted to hide that fact and make them sound like not, you know, simple songs, I guess. I don't know if we succeeded, but yeah.
I mean, you're right. That whilst you do have a feel that there's a lot of influence from artists in your music, what you've created, to me, sounds quite unique. And it's particularly in the sort of the landscape of musical that we hear at the moment. I listen to your record and I hear your voice and your songwriting, and I feel that it's quite, it stands out amongst the crowd right now, in that it's, your voice is so unique, and your songwriting is just so sort of poetic, but sort of precise. I'm not really describing well, but I feel like, yeah, you really do stand out. And whilst you might get comparisons around the place to different artists, I've seen, you know, Bob Dylan thrown around and Go-Betweens and The Apartments and things like that. But I feel like you've got a real unique sound and something that is just yours. So I think whatever you and Tim did when you worked together, you've put those songs from your head down onto, you know, vinyl or recording, and it's been a magical process. I've heard that you've written a lot of songs. A little birdie told me that you have, like, hundreds of tracks that you've written, and that getting through them all is a trick, you know, trying to figure out which ones to record and which ones to put out there. Is it really like that? Like, do you have that many songs up in your brain that you've written already?
Yeah, there's I don't know how many there are, but there's probably a few, and certainly not all of them are good. And it's hard to say, but there's a few there. It's the main difficulty is kind of knowing what ones are good, because sometimes they're very attached to a time and a place, and that time and place might be something you don't like, but you know, it's hard for me to see them as songs that are good or bad, and actually until they're released sometimes, like only then can I actually hear them and be like, oh yeah, that's good or not, you know.
So when it's out in the world, yeah, and people can hear it and I guess find their own meaning or their own comparisons to it, is that when you sort of feel a bit more at peace with the songs, or you sort of understand where they came from?
Yeah, I think so. Sometimes, I mean, like, you know, to be honest, I've been doing some quite like a couple of interviews, and it's really now that I'm unpacking the songs, because other people are as well. So, which is I'm very honored to be able to do. Like, it's I'm grateful. But yeah, sometimes you think it's about one thing, and then that changes, and I don't know. I try not to know as well. I think the more you know about your songs, the less, you know, I think you have to not know them too well. Otherwise, I don't know, you wouldn't write more or something. I don't know.
we're going to play one of the tracks from the album very soon. And it was a trick going through this record and trying to pick a couple of songs to play. We've played a bunch of your tracks over the years since you've released music. But when I had all these songs in front of me, and I was like, okay, what are we going to play in the Tuck Shop this week? And I listened to the album multiple times. One just kept on coming back to me, and it was Knockout Blues. And I think it's just the melodies in this and the harmony. I really love the way this song is put together. And every time I heard it, my ears would just prick up straight away. So I knew that that's what I want to play. Can you tell us about this track and some of the origins of where Knockout Blues came from?
Yeah, well, this one was actually, this one is perhaps a standout in the sense that it was written like, it's the only one that was written like, it was the most recent song that I'd written, which is on the album.
Okay.
And this one actually, the beds of it, the main vocals, the drums and the guitar and the bass, they were actually recorded with Mark Pickles, who is of, I don't know if you know, Ad Cobb, Sydney band. I was at his house and he asked if I could, he wanted to just try these new preamps that he got. So I just recorded it, everything, like the guitar, bass and drums and the vocal take, that was all just the first take.
Wow.
And the song, I hadn't even thought how it might go yet. That was just all it. So then I took that, I ended up thinking that I liked that and took it to Tim the next day or something. And we put the all the other accoutrements on it, like the droney stuff and the slide, and then that one came about very quickly. And I guess I don't know what it really means, but I think it was about you know, like there was a lot of uncertainty at the time with the world. It was actually the working title that was just in the session was called the Pandemic Song or something. I can't remember.
That doesn't have the same ring to it, I think.
I was looking for the big KO, so call it Knockout. No. I don't know. I like that one. I don't know. I like that one actually, because I don't really understand it. It's kind of like what I was saying before. Like, I think the songs of mine that I like the most are the ones I don't really understand or know what they're about. And that one certainly, you know, I get ideas about what it might be, what I might be trying to say, but I'm really not too sure.
Well, we'll let the listeners hear it, and then they can work out how they want to interpret the track for themselves. We're talking to Dominic Breen here on The Tuck Shop. We're going to play Knockout Blues from his amazing debut record, Blue Volume, and we'll chat again in a sec.
By Dominic Breen off his brand new debut album, Blue Volume, which dropped on Friday. And we're lucky enough to have Dom right here to have a chat. Hey, Dom, how you doing?
Oh, no, I've got him muted again.
Oh, no.
I forget that I've got to ask to unmute. I don't know. It's weird.
This is the, how you going? This is the world we live in now. You've got to mute and unmute people.
True. There's a metaphor in there somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere.
I read that not too long ago, you know, you were ready to actually throw in the towel on this whole music game, you know, for good. And you said you had a job lined up in the Gibson Desert. You know, why had you made that decision, and what drew you back, you know, to the fold of songwriting?
Well, it wasn't just music I had thrown, was ideating of throwing in the towel with. It was kind of just, I don't know, everything. I just wanted to, I don't know. That idea was probably inspired by probably some sort of mania, really. A random idea that is gonna be the solution to all the hard things, the things like that song we just heard is kind of trying to speculate on, you know, all those things. So I just thought, you know, if I go somewhere like the, you know, in a kind of like in a manic sort of up period, I get kind of ideas like that. Recently it's I want to move to Nepal. So been learning Nepalese, Namaskar Sati, Timilai Gosta Cha to all the Nepalese listeners.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. It's I'm glad I didn't move to the desert, though. That's what I'll face on that.
Well, we're very glad you didn't move to the desert either and you managed to get back and get the album out. But, you know, you've touched on something. There's a lot of uncertainty, I think, you know, in the music industry and, you know, life at the moment. And a lot of musicians are kind of reconsidering their futures and whether they can actually go on and be recording artists and touring artists. You know, what are your feelings about, you know, still pursuing music at such a very unstable time?
Well, I just think for me, it's not something I would be able to run away from or anything. Like, it's like someone, I don't know what that quote is, but wherever you go, there you are, you know, and like... Mm. Like if I went to the Gibson Desert, I'd probably start hearing songs and it'd be like, bloody hell, I wish I had a guitar, like, or something, you know, like, And I think, I don't know if there's any musicians out there that are, you know, thinking about doing something else as well. I would, you know, just, you know, it sounds lame, but it does provide you with some sort of meaning and purpose that can't really be explained, you know, and it's just I think it's probably a healthy thing to do, you know, instead of something else. I don't know.
Musicians often say that, you know, writing music can be cathartic, right? Like you're getting those words out and you're doing what you're meant to do. And I feel like for someone like yourself, you know, you couldn't escape being a musician no matter where you went. You would be a musician in the desert. You could be a musician in Nepal. You can be a musician anywhere. I guess there is that sort of freedom.
Yeah, I think in some sense,
this album and the fact that you've worked with a bunch of people, you mentioned Mark from AdCob, and I know you've worked with Sarah from Sui and Georgia Mulligan and Tim, of course. There's a really great, or I feel there's a really great musical community in the inner west of Sydney. A lot of people really helping each other out. There's a great little scene. There's a good bunch of venues to play at. Do you have that sort of core group of musician mates that you know you can call on and hang out with, and you can learn off and bump ideas off and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I think there definitely is a lot of musicians around here. I have good friends, you know, and not all of them are musicians, but I don't think you have to be a musician to know what something, you know, I don't know. I don't really run things by other musicians. It's more like when you send a mate a demo, it's more a way to feel like, you know, so it makes something exist, you know, because if you never play your music to any other people, it's like it almost, you know, it's like art needs an audience, you know, and I guess that's what's been so weird about COVID, you know. You know, so I don't really know. I haven't thought about that too much, but I think art does need any, not saying my music's art, but you know, things need an audience to make it real, you know.
Of course your music's art. I know this record's been sort of ready and done for a little while, and had you played it to people a fair bit before it was released? You know, had you said, "Oh, have a little listen, see what you think," you know? Have you been itching to get it out?
Yeah, there was a couple of close friends that because for me, I like songs can and like, you know, Ed from Double Drummer, the label that I'm on, he will know this and laugh if I say the very truth, but basically my songs fall out of favor with me on an extreme level sometimes, and like to the point of like hate, and you know, like for some reason, you know, I just bully them out of life basically. Like I'll write it and no one else has had a hand in it or whatever, but there's something about it that it's like a self-sabotage thing. So when you have like a mate that is like a safe space, as they say, sometimes it can be good to just have someone say like, that's fine, you know, you don't have to hate it. And then, you know, and then you may go, oh yeah, and then you might love it, and you know, I don't know.
So you have a love-hate relationship with some of your songs, but
yeah.
Sometimes people can talk you off. I mean, I would hope, I do wonder if I could just imagine Ed from Double Drummer, and you know, having the album ready to go, all the songs, and then you're last minute going to go, no, we're going to take this song out, or no, I don't like this one anymore. Didn't get to that extreme, I hope, but that would be scary.
No, I definitely did. There's a few that didn't make it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
I think Tim Fitz's favorite song that we recorded isn't even on the album.
Oh, wow.
Only the day before the album was released, we decided that if you bought the vinyl, you get a digital download of the album as well. And in that digital download is a bonus secret track, which is Tim Fitz's favorite song, which is my absolute least favorite song. But now that it's out, and I'm happy that it has a life now, and it didn't rust in the back end of someone's hard drive.
Well, I'm sure we're glad to see it. I've got to go searching for that now. That's awesome that it's out, that you've put it out there anyway. And I guess it's the power of digital music releases. You still can have secret tracks. Back in the old days, they used to have secret tracks on CDs, you know, where you have like a big delay in the last track at the end.
But yeah.
You still do it.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. I'll hand over to Jules.
So we mentioned it before, but you had a serious accident back in June, I think, and had to delay the album. There was these photos that you put up on Facebook of some pretty gnarly pins in your leg. That must have been really devastating at the time to have to delay your album. And how's the healing process coming along? Are you feeling a lot better? Is everything all right?
Yeah, everything's all right, Jules. I've got like a lot of metal in me now, and yeah, I've got a huge scar, which is I guess cool. It would have been cooler if it was like primary school, but no one cares about scars now that we're adults. It's I'm healing all right, like I kind of walk like a pirate now, and like I've got a stick with me most of the time, and that helps me walk around, and I get in pain and stuff every day, but it's all good.
So no more
That's a
jumping around on
surname.
stage so much.
My days of Mick Jaggering about the stage are definitely over, but I never did that anyway, really. I'm pretty still mostly. So I don't know if I've missed out on much.
Well, it's been so great to have you on and chat to you today about a truly, truly wonderful, album. And it's going to be one of the best of the year, absolutely. And we're going to wrap up with one final track from it, which is Give Me a Drink with the Cup of Your Hand. It's a gorgeous track. Can you talk a bit about its creation?
Well, yeah, this is this song actually is, I mean, the lyrics are by far the oldest in the sense compared to the rest of the songs. Those lyrics started out as a poem, which was much longer, and every stanza would end with "Give me a drink from the cup of your hand." And I wrote that poem in high school. So it's very old, but the music came about, I guess, not long ago. I just remembered it. I don't know. You just pick up the guitar and you start playing and start singing it, and it turned out it was sort of that poem. I remembered, and so I found those words and just sung it. That song's weird because they don't normally come in separate instances like that, my songs. But that one did, and I like that one as well. You've chosen the ones that I can actually live with, so thanks for choosing these. And I like this one, I guess, because I don't really know exactly. I have some theories. I think it's like, I don't know. It's about a, that I don't know actually what my theories are, but yeah, I don't know. I'm mystified slightly by it. I'm not like, I don't mean to toot my own trumpet. That makes it sound like I love it.
That's
I
right.
don't know. I just like it that I don't understand it as well as much as I do some of the other songs on the album.
I'm glad we've chosen a couple of your faves to play on the show tonight. That's just a happy coincidence that we picked those ones. But thank you so much, Dom, for jumping on, spending a bit of your Sunday with us. It's an incredible album. Everyone go listen to it, buy it, get the vinyl, get the secret track that Dom doesn't like, all of that stuff. So thank you so much, Dom Breen. It's been wonderful.
Oh, no, thank you guys very much. I'm honored to be here, and yeah, very grateful for the support. So thanks.
Thanks so much.
Anytime.